Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Uncharacteristically walked a couple, but he had two outs and he got ahead real quick. 0-2, tried to throw a breaking ball at the bottom of the zone or bounce it and just left it, you know, just right there. And shoot, I mean, that's three, and that it held up. You know, they kind of had a night like we did last night. For the most part, they kept us off the board. It wasn't his best performance. If not for a hanging 0-2 pitch, he'd have given up one. He's pretty good.
And I think it's more so the walks and the curve. That throwing bad curve, I think it was one of them. You know, the one for the home run obviously wasn't a good pitch, but I think the walks were the bigger issue.
Yeah, he was strong yesterday. Almost a little too strong at the beginning. Had some command issues, and that can happen to extra days off. His velocity was good. He settled down. I thought Salty did an excellent job with him behind the plate, and he was able to get through seven innings, two runs. We'll take that from every starter. Shutouts can happen any time of year. Doesn't matter the first game, last game, they can happen. Zimmerman is back on track to pitch this weekend. Pelfrey's active again, so a lot of the guys are starting to trickle back onto the roster. Hopefully get the win and leave Chicago having 1-2 out of 3.
My mentality is so, it's such a football player's mentality, right? Just the aggression, more is better, compete, compete, compete. And I think for me, it's really been understanding. Sometimes I got to back off, pull the reins back a little bit. I mean, you can tell I've been swinging a lot by my hands, right? Being able to really adjust to the sport. Honestly, I think compete and counts. Compete when it was 0-2 and be able to fight it off and get a hit. I mean, I think my strength is when it comes in to be able to take it. And there's, you don't always get that opportunity. So when they give you something you can drive the other way, drive it. I feel pretty comfortable. I was hoping they were going to get me a few where I could run and go dive. But I feel like I got the arm to make the throws that I need to.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, it is an extravaganza on a Wednesday afternoon edition right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. Bob France with you. Appreciate you being here with us right here on The Ticket. We've got a lot of ground to cover today. We spent all day yesterday doing college football. We did a tremendous college football preview broadcast kind of a thing from Kroger in Perrysburg with Mark Beyer on the scene and the Bobblehead Show. So really appreciate you being here. So I am here, and that is the good news. Jim Cushlin, however, is also here. So all right, there you go. So Jim Cushlin is here as well.
I'll actually take the silence. I'm a little relieved. I thought I was going to get something else.
Well, they just decided to be nice, I guess, today. And if you, what did their moms teach them? If you don't have anything nice to say, you don't say anything at all.
So well, good. At least they listen to their moms today.
Cushlin, we're just messing, of course. Jim Cushlin is here alongside, as he is almost always. And we're glad you're a part of the program, too. Phone lines are going to be open at 866-240-1065. This first hour, we have a lot of things to talk about. Okay, and we're just going to dive right into it because, again, yesterday we spent almost the whole show on college. In fact, we did spend the whole show on college football. And I'm going to start there again today, only because I didn't get a chance with all of the interviews we were playing, you know, talking about Toledo and BG. And by the way, speaking of Toledo and BG, because of the I-75 rivalry bobbleheads yesterday, we have more Toledo and BG today. Specifically, we have head coaches Mike Jinks and Jason Candle. We're going to have for you their conversations with Jim Cushlin are coming up in the 4 o'clock hour at about 4:30. As a matter of fact, 4:30, we'll hear from Coach Jinks coming off of BGSU's really, really difficult season opening loss to Ohio State, a record-breaking offensive day for the Buckeyes against the Falcons. And then we'll hear from Jason Candle coming off a very different kind of an opening weekend football game, as the Rockets took down Arkansas State. So we're going to hear from both of them in the 4:30 portion of the program. For today, however, or for this hour, I should say, however, I want to talk about where the rankings are. Now, this is one of those things where, look, I'm not under any illusions. I'm not saying I'm going to affect any change here. Nobody is going to just gripe about this and expect college football to fix it. But having said that, college football, for good God's sake, fix it. I mean, it is just so ridiculous that we're talking about these teams in terms of ranks right now, given where everything is. I mean, seriously, Jim, somebody explain to me how, for example, the University of Texas can be literally outside the top 25 a few days ago in the preseason ranking, outside the top 25. Barely squeaked by Notre Dame in double overtime, And suddenly now they're the 11th best team in college football, the 11th best team in the country. You go from unranked to 11th. Now, either that's not possible, or the other alternative is the people who vote in these polls are simply ridiculously stupid. And I have nothing against Texas, by the way. This has nothing to do with Texas. But we have to talk about this. How can last week, just a few days ago, the University of Wisconsin not even be in a factor? They're not even in the top 25. They're nowhere to be found among college football's best teams. But they beat, in a home game essentially, at Lambeau Field, you know, in Green Bay, they beat an extraordinarily overrated LSU team, and they are suddenly the 10th best team in the country, unranked to 10th, with one win, and that was a really, really close win too. So I'm not saying, but I'm just kind of saying, if you know what I mean. There is no reason whatsoever, no reason to be ranking these teams right now when nobody, not you, not me, not Kirk Herbstreit, not Paul Feinbaum, not, I don't know, pick your analyst, none of them, not any of the coaches or athletic directors who vote in the quote-unquote coaches poll, none of them knows how good these teams are. None of them knows what kind of real contenders they're going to be because they're just getting started. It is ridiculous to even be having these conversations right now, and yet here we sit. Look at, for example, the University of Houston. Houston was the 15th best team. They go out there and wax an extraordinarily overrated Oklahoma team, and suddenly they're the 6th best team based on one week's performance. In what way did they deserve that? Now, let's look at the flip side. The University of Tennessee. Tennessee went into this past week's games, the first weekend's games, ranked number 9 in the country, according to the Associated Press rankings. Number 9 in the country. 9th best team in all of college football. They are at home. They're at home against Appalachian State. And against App State, they barely edge in overtime an Appalachian State team 20-13. And they have only fallen down to number 17. They're still in the top 25. How can a team that was supposed to be the 9th best team in the country barely squeak by against a nobody like App State and not fall out of the top 25? How are they still amongst the best teams in the country? Somebody is going to have to make some sense out of this for me. Because I'm looking at these rankings, and when we talk about this often, Alabama certainly looked like the best team in the country. But I don't need a little one next to their name to tell me that they may be indeed the best team in the country. Clemson did not look anything close to like they're the best team in the country. Yet here they are with 2 votes as the best team in the country. Florida State got 4 votes as the best team in the country. Ohio State got none despite putting up 77. Michigan got a first place vote. Probably, I don't know, it doesn't matter where it came from. Then Houston, Stanford, Washington, Georgia, Wisconsin, Texas, Michigan State, Louisville, and Oklahoma. Oklahoma, there you go, that's another one. Oklahoma, third-rated team in the country. Third-rated team in the country. They get waxed by Houston, 33-23. They get waxed by Houston. And Oklahoma only drops from 3rd down to 14th. Somebody explain that one to me as well. LSU went from 5th to 21st, still in the top 25. 16-place plunge, but still there. What I want to know is what would these rankings look like if we erased all of them and said no rankings happen until, Jim, what did we decide, the first Monday in October?
Yeah, at least after get through 4 weekend out of conference games. A lot of conferences, like Big Ten, it's usually standardized. First 4 games, or now 3 out of conference. Wait until at least the out of conference is done.
Yeah, and then maybe, you know, a week of conference.
Sure,
your
why
first
not?
Conference game, probably. Because we got, I mean, just looking at the calendar here, right? I got to flip it. It still says August. It's because I'm too lazy to flip it up. Okay, so week number two is games are coming up here on the 10th, 17th. So that's your first 3 weeks are being played right there. Your first week of conference games, in most cases, would be the 24th of September. And then the first week of October is October 1st. That's a Saturday. So then Monday, October 3rd, after everybody has played roughly four or five games, including a conference game or two, now we release the first rankings. That is the only possible way, because, again, if you start out high in these completely made-up guess rankings that the college football experts put together, if you start out really high, you have to absolutely suck and bottom out to get down out of the top 25. But if you suck and you don't bottom out, like, for example, at the ones that I just mentioned, LSU, Tennessee, these teams that just got waxed, or in Tennessee's case, they didn't get waxed, but they barely won against App State in overtime. You get these teams, they're not dropping down nearly far enough. Oklahoma, nearly far enough based on what they showed. And you have other teams jumping up way too high based on their original rankings. Now, it may turn out that, for example, a team like Texas should have been in there all along. And this is just proof of it. Look what they managed to do against Notre Dame. Maybe it does. Maybe Wisconsin, what they did to LSU is not a fluke, and they should have been in there all along. But they shouldn't have to go from, you know, number 37 or whatever they were since they were in the top 25 to number 10 based on one double overtime win, Texas. It's just silly. It can't happen. It shouldn't happen. And I'm just kind of frustrated because I love college football, but I cannot stand the, you know, Jim, we talked about this yesterday with Beyer. This is all about 100% all about making money, because there is money to be made when you can put on the screen on September 10th, number two Clemson against number nine Georgia. They're not playing Georgia. I'm just saying. You know, rather than just saying Clemson versus Georgia, two historically great programs, how will they do? How will they be? You know, without a number attached to it, you can't hype it as much. When you don't hype it as much, you don't get what? As many viewers. And when you don't get as many viewers, you get what? Lower ratings. And when you get lower ratings, you get what? You get lower revenue for your commercial spots, your advertising inventory that you have to sell for those games. So they announce these teams. Names with numbers after them, and it just simply translates into dollar signs. And I, for one, have had just about enough of it. Kush, go ahead.
Yeah, and circling back, I mean, you know, it's not necessarily to me that these guys are morons that are doing this poll. This is back to the inherent flaw, which we've discussed time and again, and here we are. And part of this, you know, the one number you didn't mention at all that is, I believe this is the most ranked teams to lose in an opening week since they first created the poll, and that was in the 1950s.
Wow.
So what you have here is, once again, an indictment of doing a preseason poll. To me, it's as simple as that. That's what we're really talking about here. These polls that they put out there, and one always wants to give at least a little more credence to the AP poll, because that's at least writers. I mean, long ago, I personally chucked the coaches poll out of my mind as legitimate ever since I, you know, going back to when Steve Spurrier was a coach, it'd always be that one preseason poll for a Duke vote, even though they were going to go 0-12 because of sentimental reasons. You can't be doing that in polls. That's right. Why I don't even pay attention to the coaches poll. But considering the AP poll is supposed to be writers and people that follow,
but even
it,
then, these are people who are guessing.
Sure,
they're guessing
the
that Notre Dame.
Yes, and that's
guessing
the problem
that Oklahoma
here.
was you know the best team or third best team or whatever it was.
They were third.
They were,
yeah,
guessing all along.
Yeah, and that's the problem. It goes back to the issue of how just messed up some of these preseason polls, and when what happens to them as you play the first couple of weeks of the season, because it all starts with that original one, and then you adjust accordingly based on who wins and loses and stuff. That's right. What has to go. But you're right, and I'm glad you and Mark Beyer brought this up on our show yesterday, because you guys are right. I just like other things in other sports we talk about, where like preseason in the NFL, yeah, we know what we all should do something about it, but we know it's never going to get done because money. Same basic principle
That's
in
it.
Play
Always.
Here. Because you're right. You can hype a game more going into Saturday if it's two versus nine as opposed to, oh, these are two named programs that you totally know, but we're not putting any numbers next to them. You're right. As stupid as that sounds, that creates extra eventual revenue as you go down the line.
No question about it. So we want your thoughts on that. How do you feel about these rankings? Do you pay attention to them? And should the committee, that's the key, Jim. And the reason I bring it up is the committee is made up of human beings. And the committee is going to consider, talking about the College Football Playoff Committee, they're going to consider where all these teams finish. And the problem is they may not consider where they started. And some of them started way too high based on what their preseason expectations were, and some started way too low and should have been ranked higher and never got a chance to climb as high as they could have and should have in order to get into that college football playoff. And that is the issue. If it was just a poll for fun, I wouldn't give two blanks about it, right? If it was just a poll to say, just to give people something to talk about, yeah, whatever. But since it's since it is used, it is a part, it is a component of deciding, you know, who gets into the college football playoff and who gets into bowls, who gets into the top New Year's Day bowls and all that sort of stuff, based on where they finish. Since it matters in that regard, then they doggone well ought to be getting it right rather than ranking these teams before they ever see them play. All right. So if you want to get in on that, we'll do it at 866-240-1065. I got a number of issues I told you I wanted to talk about in this first hour of the program. The head coach of Team USA Hockey has earned my highest praise that I can give somebody when I do a radio program. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. It is from the Warriors. It is Cyrus, and he is asking,
can you dig it?
I dig it each and every time somebody does something outstanding, and the head coach of Team USA, John Tortorella, is outstanding. Why? Because he is tired of the political correct crap that has been brought in to the sports world by the Colin Kaepernick sitting and kneeling protest. His fistful of lies and all of the other crap that he's talking about the United States, its culture, its society, its police, et cetera, et cetera. John Tortorella is the head coach of Team USA Hockey. Jim, did you know that there was a Hockey World Cup?
No, I didn't. Although I did discover that they finished the qualifying for the next Winter Olympics, so now the USA has their group, by the way. Russia's in their group, incidentally.
Oh, that is so funny. That is so funny. I didn't even know there was a Hockey World Cup, and I found this story this morning. I said, oh, my gosh, I love this. John Tortorella is the head coach of Team USA, and Team USA players will be standing at attention for the national anthem before hockey games with John Tortorella at the helm. Why? Because he said if a player is sitting during the national anthem, that's where he will remain for the entire game. That's right. He has announced he will bench players who sit during the anthem. There will be no disrespecting of the flag, the anthem, the military, the country, or anything else when you're representing Team USA. And you know what? The idea that that statement or that stand is controversial in any way, shape, or form is about the most ridiculous thing that I've ever heard, considering the fact this isn't his NHL team. This is, and even then, I would say that's still an outstanding rule, just like the NBA has. You will be standing at attention, facing the flag during the national anthem, being respectful. So you can certainly do that anyway. But this isn't his NHL team. This is literally Team USA. You are literally representing the United States of America, and we want you to do it in a manner that is proud. Can you imagine, Jim Cushlin, if somebody like Colin Kaepernick had pulled this stunt of his that is inspiring other people to do similarly stupid, disrespectful things? The most recent, by the way, is Jabari Parker, the Milwaukee Bucks, the former Duke star. He is now wearing a Colin Kaepernick jersey saying, I got your back, homie. We had an openly gay female soccer player the other day kneel and do the same thing, saying, yeah, I'm with Colin Kaepernick. Jim, if he had pulled this crap earlier, can you imagine if an Olympian had won a medal and had knelt during the playing of the national anthem or sat instead of standing at attention, what kind of an international embarrassment that would have been? All for a bunch of crap. K-E-R-R-A-P-P, crap. That would have been unbelievable. So I just want to say to Coach John Tortorella, the head coach of Team USA, if any of my players sit on the bench for the national anthem, they will sit there the rest of the game. I want to tell him, thank you. God bless you. I appreciate you standing up for our country, standing up for what our nation is, standing up for our flag, the symbol of our Constitution, and beyond. That is what it takes, leadership. Roger Goodell, are you listening? Jed York, are you listening? Women's Soccer League, whoever you are you listening? Stop this garbage right now. If your players want to make social statements for some reason or another, do it on their own time. Don't disrespect the national anthem and the United States flag while all of this is going on. John Tortorella is a hero in my book. Even though I hear ESPN personalities apologizing left and right. Did you see what they made Feinbaum do?
No.
Wait till we get this. I'll play it for you in the next segment. I'm going to get a timeout. I'm going to get a call and then a timeout here. Wait until you hear what they made Paul Feinbaum do. But as they are crying and whining and everything else about all of this injustice, et cetera, John Tortorella standing firm. By the way, Tortorella heard all the backlash and was asked about it today, because this happened yesterday, was asked about it today. Are you standing by that, or are you kind of walking that back a little bit about benching players who decide to sit for the anthem? John Tortorella stood tall in announcing that he is still standing tall. John Tortorella is not backing down. Stephen A. Smith and others are calling for him to be fired as head coach of Team USA. Apparently, other people can pull stunts if they feel like that's what they have to do to exercise their First Amendment rights. But John Tortorella can't pull a stunt such as threatening the benching of any player who does this, which is his First Amendment right. It's also his right as the head coach of the team. He can decide who plays and who doesn't, and his reasons are his and his alone. But they're calling for him to be fired. You know what? John Tortorella is a national hero as far as I'm concerned. You know who else is? Tony Stewart, NASCAR driver. Because he made sure to weigh in too and called Colin Kaepernick an idiot for this. Quote, tweeting yesterday. No, not yesterday. This was just reported yesterday, but tweeted a few days ago. I'm sorry, but at Kaepernick 7 needs to learn the fact about police before running his dumb ass mouth. He has no clue what they go through. Hashtag idiot. Hey, Tony Stewart, 2 in 1 day, is it possible? Yes, it is. Throw the hammer down on this lunacy, because I, like Tortorella and Stewart and Steve Mariucci, I don't know if you heard Mariucci, the former Niners coach, Drew Brees, Boomer Esiason, and others, are just tired of all of the misinformation and the nonsense. You know who else was? Paul Feinbaum was, until ESPN got their hooks into him and made him do something about it. I'll explain that on the other side. Tony in Perrysburg, let's get him on the air to talk about these college polls before our bottom of the hour Sports Center break. Tony, how are you, sir?
Hey, pretty good. Kudos to America's hockey team, man.
Amen.
Great to hear. Great
Amen.
To
it
hear.
Certainly is. Yes, it is. Thank you, Tony.
Now we get to this bowl thing. I gotta talk you guys off the ledge here. You're getting carried away. Now look back over the last 20 years, even before the BCS. Hasn't the bowls pretty much equaled it out? I mean, haven't the polls pretty much equaled it out? Don't they get it right at the end?
No, not really. I don't think they do. Because, you know, especially before they started doing the playoff, when they were doing the BCS, which was just all the average of all the computer rankings, you know, the Sagarin rankings and this computer ranking and that one and so on and so forth, and they took into account where, and they assigned points for where teams were ranked. And at the end of it all, there were teams that deserved to be ranked higher but didn't get there in time, and there were teams that should have been ranked a lot lower but didn't fall far enough because of the way they started out in such a higher place. To me, Hold on, Tony. Let me finish this sentence, and then you can take it from there and give me your thoughts on it. But for me, in order to finish in the right place at the end, you have to start in the right place at the beginning. And you can't start at the right place before we have even seen snap number one and giving the first rankings. Go ahead, Tony.
Well, I'm not disputing that it does skew things, but how often is it that a national championship is robbed from somebody because of that? Hardly ever. And that's all we care about, right? Who's on top at the end?
I don't know. I mean, I don't have them all memorized, but I would like to go back, and maybe we can do that sometime, and talk about who made it into the national championship game, and talk about where they were ranked and where they should have been ranked, and talk about where they finished the season compared to where they started the season, and talk about teams that ended up going into a bowl game but not the national championship game because they didn't get a high enough ranking, and they started out too low and couldn't climb high enough.
Sure,
all of those things are a big, big issue for me. You've got to start in the right place in order to finish in the right place.
And your argument probably holds more merit towards the upper half of the rankings, not necessarily the guys who are 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah, I suppose so. But, there's also just from a credibility standpoint, right? I mean, Tony, you watch college football. You're into it. I watch college football. I'm into it. I have an idea of who I think the best team might be. Maybe you do, too. But the ones that we rely on to give us those definitive answers, the pollsters, with the AP and with the coaches' poll and Sports Illustrated's poll, et cetera, they literally have lost credibility when prior to week one they have, for example, Texas unranked, not even one of the top 25, and now we're to believe, hey, they're the 11th best. Well, what did they do? Did they just blow out a team that was number five? Or, no, they won a double overtime game that they were lucky to win by the skin of their teeth against another
with
team.
With them and Wisconsin, I question the rankings with them and Wisconsin after their wins. Don't get me wrong,
so
Wisconsin's done great, but, wow, all of a sudden they weren't ranked. I get that.
How is a Tennessee team that barely squeaked by in overtime against Appalachian State at home at Rocky Top, how are they still the 17th best team in the country right now?
And don't forget, guys, that game featured down the stretch App State bad clock management and a missed extra point that helped overtime, no less.
Thank you. That's another great point. That's what I'm talking about. So to me, I guess I'm looking for this, even if it doesn't necessarily affect the actual outcome of the national championship, Tony. I'm looking for credibility along the way. When I hear it's number one versus number three, a showdown between Alabama and Florida State, for example, I want it to mean something. They're number one and they're number three because we saw them each play four games. We saw everybody play four games, and these two teams have proven to be far and away, two of the top three or four in the country. I want that to mean something because right now, number one versus number six means nothing. Number three versus number 10 means nothing.
But it hasn't for a long time.
A week ago, they weren't even in the top 25.
It hasn't for a long time. I think all of us can agree that you really don't even start looking at the polls until after week five or six. At least I don't.
Well, unfortunately, I think everybody kind of is forced to because you can't watch college football and not see them blast the rankings at you. You know what I mean? When you hear a promo on TV.
Yeah.
For the game, it's going to say, number five Michigan takes on number whatever, number 12 Michigan State this week. And I know, again, I'm just making teams
up. But I think that's where the selection committee's got it right.
Say that again?
I think that's where the selection committee's at least got that part right.
What how's that?
That they don't put out their rankings until later in the
game. Oh, right, yes, I would agree with that. But, and this is, you're bringing it home for me, so that's just a great, great circle back. The committee, when they put out their ranking, which is when, Jim? Late October, isn't
yeah.
it? Late October.
I got to look up the actual date for this year.
They go week to week. But their first ranking is going to be based in part on where the teams are ranked and at that time in terms of the AP and the coaches poll. And those rankings are going to have been dictated or moved or impacted by how teams moved up and down based on the preseason ranking. And some of them
shouldn't
have climbed that high to get where they need to be in order for the committee to rank them where they need to be as they get moving toward the actual selection of the four playoff teams.
First playoff rankings, by the way, guys, November 1st at 7 o'clock is the first rankings released.
1st, there you go.
So you're getting through 2 months.
It's such late October that it's into November.
I get that, too, but I've never heard on how much actual leverage those actually give those teams, the earlier
rankings.
Well,
that's up to each member of the committee when they vote, when they put their own
It's subjective, right?
Say again?
It's subjective, right?
Yes, it is. But that's my point. In something as subjective as this, people are influenced, because they're people, they're human beings, by what other people think. And when they hear that somebody is number one or somebody is number two or somebody is number three, I would like that for them to hear something that is credible, that it's a credible number three and not a, hey, this is where we started. And that's the other thing. The actual pollsters, the ones who vote here, they have to be convinced that they were wrong. You know, that's why I think you get a team, for example, like Tennessee. All of these people who voted and had them as high as number 9 in the preseason probably didn't want to say, well, I was an idiot. They shouldn't even have been in the top 25. But they're afraid to say that. They don't want to say
that. Sure, the guy who voted for him is going to say, well, I can't drop them all the way out.
I'll vote for them at number 30. You know what I'm saying? So that's why they're still in there at number 17. And all Tennessee's got to do is go blow a couple of teams out, and suddenly a team that narrowly avoided the loss to App State is suddenly back up in the top 10 and is a factor come November 1st when those human beings who do the actual CFP rankings, they start to grab teams and put them in play. Tennessee is now a factor. And to me, they shouldn't be. They should be ranked for the first time in the first. Well, Jim, what did you say? November 1st?
November 1st, that evening, and I think that's a Monday.
And it ought to be October 3rd, which is a Monday.
Now, check that. Monday. November 1st is a Tuesday, so that Tuesday night at 7 will be the first college ranking. So you got to go through two
and
months.
1 month before that, October 3rd, is when they should have the first actual AP and college coaches poll rankings, too, because then those will be more legit. And when the subjective voters or committee members, I should say, in the CFP committee, the selection committee, when they then make their rankings, if they use, in their subjective opinions, if they use the polls as part of their decision-making process, they will then be at least using something that we can call remotely valid, which I think what we're seeing now is not. I think that's
I can't argue any of your points. I just think that, especially since they started some kind of playoff system, even if it was just the two-team playoff,
yeah,
they've actually gotten it right for those games. You can argue one team or another, Snyder, Baylor, Tech, you know, whatever. But for the most part,
that argument will continue
right
for a long time, too.
You're always going to have,
especially until
left
the
out.
Big 12 gets themselves a championship game. That is very true. And I also think that what we're going
to
find
teams,
out.
You go to 16 teams, number 17. You go to 16 teams, number 17 is going to be left out.
Yeah, but
that's,
you know what? Nobody's
going to
care that deep into it. Nobody is going to. There's not going to be a fight over it. If you're like, if there is like a borderline fourth or fifth in the country, nobody's going to be that upset between 16 and 17, or probably even.
I agree. I personally, guys, don't think there'll be much of an argument if you go to 8 for the 9th team, because in the vast majority of situations in an 8 team system, if they were to implement it, you get all 5 of the power champs with some space left over for a few at larges and Notre Dame too.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's also a really, really, really good possibility or probability that the 9th ranked team is going to be a 2-loss team. You know, and then when you lose 2, you know, you're going to say, hey, you can't argue much here. You lost 2. I don't want to hear about your strength of schedule, et cetera, versus the 8th ranked team. But you're gonna get yourself down there into the weeds, where it's gonna be a lot harder for people to get upset about the team left out at 9 or at 18, or I'm sorry, at 17, much
Agreed.
More so than at 5.
Agreed.
Tony, great chat, my friend. I appreciate
Thanks,
it. I got to run because I got to take this time out to tell you about more college football. And this time, though, college football apparel at the Buckeye Store and more of the College and Pro Superstore. Football season is here, as you know, and so is the early season sale at the Buckeye Store and more. 10% store-wide savings and 50 to 75% off select items as doorbuster sales. That's right, each and every day at the Buckeye Store and more. Hundreds of new Nike products are in stock, and they get hundreds of new products arriving daily at the largest store in Ohio dedicated to Buckeye gear. Just go to Sylvania and go to Starlight Plaza. Look for Big Brutus on the Roof, and you can't miss it. It's 5700 Monroe, right between Ralphie's and Dave's at the Buckeye Store and more. You'll find Buckeye gear and then fan zones for Michigan, Michigan State, Notre Dame, Toledo, BG, and baseball's Tigers. All of it there at the Buckeye Store and more. Starlight Plaza, 5700 Monroe in Sylvania, the Buckeye Store and more, the College and Pro Superstore. All right, we're going to get a quick time out here. I've got a lot of people I want to talk to. I want to get back into the Colin Kaepernick, John Tortorella story as well, because that to me is a huge one. And how about Tim Tebow? How about Tebow putting on that power display and the Atlanta Braves saying, you know, why not? What's the risk here to bring him into one of our minor league clubs and see if he can hit live pitching for 5 minutes? What's the big deal? To me, there is no big deal. It's a very, very low to no risk move, and yet people are griping about it. We're going to talk about that as we continue as well. Right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
TheTicket.com. Be part of the extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, 3:46 as we roll on the extravaganza this Wednesday afternoon. Hey, you know what we need to do since it is Wednesday? We need to shine the spotlight on the great high school performers of the week, the KeyBank High School Athletes of the Week. For the girls, Jamie Cox is a senior for St. Ursula, and Ursula Volleyball, that is. And Jamie was named to the preseason All-USA Today girls volleyball team. The team consists of 21 players from all over the nation, and Cox, who is a Michigan State recruit, was the only player from the state of Ohio chosen for that team. St. Ursula expected again to contend for the track title. Congratulations to Jamie Cox. For the boys, Central Catholic running back Michael Warren, no surprise here. Warren went off again on Friday with 198 yards on the ground and six touchdowns, count them six, as the Irish knocked off St. Francis of New York 48-18. If you have a high school athlete that you think deserves the spotlight and the mentions on the radio, please nominate them for us. Tell us who they are. Tell us what they did. Tell us when they did it. And you might hear their name and their statistics, et cetera, being announced on the radio. All you got to do is send that information to
athlete@1065theticket.com. And if you submit a nominee, I will give you a shout-out for doing so.
There you go. So not only does the athlete get the nomination, the shout-out to the nominator as well. All right. I want to get back into this now before we go into another topic, including Tim Tebow, and back to the phones on the issue of the rankings. And by the way, good calls. Let's keep those going at 866-240-1065 right here on the ticket. I want to describe what happened to Paul Feinbaum, because this is the kind of thing that just drives me bananas, and it's why I try really, really hard, and I fail sometimes. I'll fully, you know, acknowledge this. But it's why I try really hard to separate sports from social stuff. It's why I don't like when the athletes are wearing their social statement T-shirts onto the field. I didn't like when the Rams come onto the field with their hands up. I didn't like when the ESPYs had LeBron and Carmelo and Chris Paul and who was the fourth one? LeBron and Melo. Oh, and Dwayne Wade. You know, doing their little social statement and talking about very, very controversial things. We turn to sports to stay away from that other stuff. I don't like them mixing, but when they do, it has to be addressed. And this is the problem that I have. ESPN, which is, of course, the worldwide leader in sports, they are what they are. And they are, you know, just a dominant force in that regard. But they are also very, very overtly political from time to time. And it's something that I think they really need to pull back from. And I'm saying that fully well knowing that we are ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, and I love our affiliation with ESPN Radio. But this is a little bit ridiculous, okay? Here's what I'm talking about. We all know that the Colin Kaepernick story is a very controversial one. We know that the Colin Kaepernick story has a lot of people upset. I've given you some names of some very high-profile people from, you know, Drew Brees, a former NFL MVP and Super Bowl champion, ripping Colin Kaepernick to Steve Mariucci, former Super Bowl coach, doing that to who else? I mentioned Tony Stewart, the NASCAR legend. You know, a lot of people really, really upset with Colin Kaepernick for disrespecting the flag and upset with Colin Kaepernick for disrespecting, you know, the country, essentially. But there are also some who have gotten his back, including Jeremy Lin with the Seattle Seahawks, who knelt in solidarity before their preseason game this past week about the Kaepernick protest of America because America isn't treating people of color fairly. You had a female soccer player, an openly gay soccer player, and I don't really care about her sexuality or orientation. I bring that up because she says, as an openly gay player, I have seen firsthand how people like me don't have their liberties, taken or not taken. How did she word it? I don't have the quote in front of me now, but basically said we don't have the same liberties everybody else does. And I'm just tired of that. I'm tired of that nonsense because it's not true. I challenged her, not that she knows me from Adam, but I went on Twitter and challenged her back and said, please list for us the liberties that you don't have as an openly gay female soccer player. Please tell us what constitutional liberty is not being taken care of for you. What are you not allowed to do that everybody else is allowed to do? I got no response. Again, probably because she doesn't know me, but even if she did, she would have nothing to say because it's not true. Now, the point to all of this is, there. And then there's Cam Newton, by the way, who I think deserves the biggest tip of the cap, because Cam Newton, the reigning NFL MVP and NFC champion, Cam Newton tried to bring everybody together and was excoriated for it. Cam Newton said, stop this mess about complaining about one-eighth of an inch. One-eighth of an inch is causing all of these problems. And people are like, what is he talking about? One-eighth of an inch? What is he talking about? Cam Newton is right. He said 1/8 of an inch is the thickness of the human skin. Under it, we are all the same color. And it's so true. He's trying to say enough with the division here. This is silly. We're all the same kind of thing. We're all the same people. And he got excoriated for it by people who wanted to continue to draw the division, by the Kaepernick supporters who wanted to say, no, we are not all the same color. Some of us are treated differently. Because that 1/8 of an inch of skin makes all the difference. And it's just so ridiculous that people can't rally behind Newton's message of unity among all of us. Instead, they rally behind Colin Kaepernick. Which brings me to Paul Feinbaum. Now, you probably know Paul Feinbaum. He is one of the best and most well-respected college analysts working for ESPN. Feinbaum, who is from the South, he covers the SEC a lot. Some say he's got a really bad SEC bias, and that's a matter of opinion. That's college sports. Who gives a garbage, right? But Paul Feinbaum was on a panel on one of the ESPN shows with three other people in which they were talking about the Colin Kaepernick situation. And Feinbaum was the only one to challenge Kaepernick's assertion that people of color are treated unfairly in the United States of America, that there is police brutality against people simply because of their skin color. Feinbaum said, that's not true. Feinbaum said, this is not a racist country. Now, are there issues that need to be dealt with on a time-to-time basis? Sure, as there would be in any society, because our society is not perfect. None could be. But we are not an inherently racist country. We are not a country that has police officers that treat people of color differently than they treat people who are not of color. He said, that's ridiculous. Well, oh my gosh, you can only imagine the conversations in the corner offices in Bristol, Connecticut at the ESPN studios and offices. Because one panelist didn't agree with what everybody else was saying, yeah, Colin, you got the right, Colin, you go on and tell him, Colin. Just because one didn't toe a progressive company line, he was made to apologize, and he was made to go on to a program hosted by an African-American female, Carrie Champion, to talk about how incredibly wrong he was, how terribly misguided he was in suggesting that that people of color were not mistreated in this country and were not oppressed in this country, because clearly they are. The apology he gave was cringe-inducing because you could tell every single word were words that he was forced to say. I want you to listen to this exchange. At least I hope you can listen to this exchange.
All right, so, Paul, I have a hard turn here. It's still related to college football. The other day you had a conversation with Marcus Spears on your radio show about Colin Kaepernick. For our viewers who did not get the opportunity to listen in, I'd like to play that and get your reaction.
Sure. The genesis of this flag goes back to the War of 1812, and I just really don't understand. I mean, again, back, not to look at the country back then, but the two just, this country has issues, but this country is not oppressing black people.
I don't think it is. It's oppressing black people, but I will say this.
There are major issues, but
that's, and by the way, that's Marcus Spears right there agreeing that I don't think this country is oppressing black people. But Feinbaum is saying not that there aren't issues. Of course there are issues. But to make it sound like a blanket statement like this country oppresses black people the way Colin Kaepernick is making it sound is simply not true. That's what Paul Feinbaum's point is, and Marcus Spears actually is agreeing with.
The underservice of the community.
Yeah.
It's basically what it boils down.
It's a different issue, though.
It's a different issue.
So they agreed. They agreed. And yet ESPN got their hooks into Feinbaum, and I can only imagine the threat.
What's been the reaction since you said that you don't believe the country is oppressing black people?
Carrie, it's been incredible. I've heard from so many people, and most of whom were shocked by what I said, and I've done what I always do in cases like this. I've gone back to review what I said there. I went back to review what I said in the exchange with Joey Galloway on College Football Live, and I could spend the rest of my life trying to talk my way out of it, but I can't. I blew it. I simply did not have a good grasp of the situation. I know better. I've lived in this country. I see what is going on all across the country from north to south, east to west, and I have no excuse. I can't explain why I articulated the words the way they did.
Because you had freedom of speech and you had freedom of thought and you were actually considering the actual statements that Colin Kaepernick made and you thought about them and said he's wrong. It's not a racist country we're living in. This isn't 1960. You were correct to do that. And now as you sit here and say, I have no excuse and I apologize for my words, you can tell exactly what ESPN was making Paul Feinbaum do. He wasn't towing the company line. He was going to apologize for it or he's going to find himself on the outside looking in.
But I did, and there's a public record of it, and there's a natural reaction, and I respect that. And all I can say is that I made a terrible mistake in trying to express a feeling that I probably... Not probably. I had no right to express.
What does that mean? Why did he have to say that? What does that mean? What do you mean he had no right to express his opinion? Isn't that what this whole Kaepernick thing started on? He has a right to express his opinion about the national anthem and the flag. What, do you only have a right to express your opinion when you are a person of color? But this southern white guy from ESPN expresses an opinion and he has no right to express it? That's how he feels about this now after saying, wait a minute, this is not a racist country.
Not probably. I had no right to express.
Wow. First Amendment defense, anybody? Anybody going to come to his defense like I am? Anybody, anywhere. He doesn't have a right to express his opinion. Well, apparently he must agree that he doesn't because he is letting ESPN tell him what to do here.
I don't know whether this will mean anything to anyone, but I feel compelled to answer your question that way, that it was a terrible mistake on my part. And
I just find it absolutely sickening, honestly, that we are where we are, that Colin Kaepernick can take a bunch of non-facts, a false narrative, make a story out of it, and make no mistake, that is exactly what this is. Make a story out of it with his ridiculous little protest that is based in no factual evidence whatsoever. He gets some support from some people, he gets some criticism from others, but an ESPN analyst criticizes him, and he's got to basically apologize on the air in order to save his job. And oh, by the way, he's got to do it. To an African-American female host, Carrie Champion, who is almost kind of sitting there accepting the apology on behalf of Black America. It is wrong. The racist narrative that is going on, honest to goodness, has got to just get out of sports. Let's all listen to Cam Newton, an African-American quarterback, who is the only one speaking sense here. And that is, let's judge everybody and everything by who they are, not by that 1/8 of an inch of skin color. God bless you, Cam Newton. And Paul Feinbaum, I feel really, really badly for what just happened to that guy. All he did was his same thing Colin Kaepernick did. He expressed his constitutional right to free speech. He gave his opinion on a matter and suddenly ended up having to fight for his job over it. It is just sickening to see. All right, we're coming up on hour number two. And before we get there, let's talk about something that is a lot more fun to talk about, and that is the actual games on the field. That's what we're here, and that's what it's all about. You've been waiting for the pro season to start. The college season is already underway. And I cannot wait until Sunday, September 11th, to get ready for the next season. But guess what else? I'm ready for the fantasy season as well. And if you can't wait to get your season going, then get going right now with FanDuel online at FanDuel.com. The season is here, and that means fantasy football, which is fantasy football for everyday fans at FanDuel, with new contests starting every week. It means no busted seasons because one of your top draft picks gets hurt. No busted seasons because you get to redraft each and every week. Just pick a contest, choose your team, and watch your score in real time. By the way, the big deal this week, the Sunday Million Dollar Contest is paying out $2 million. That's right, Sunday Million Contest paying out $2 million. $200,000 goes to first place. This is epic. And guess what? If you're a rookie, you can play against other rookies in the first-timer contest. If you are in a battle with a friend, you can play head-to-head with a friend. Maybe you want to play in a 50-50 league or a 50-50 contest where the top half wins cash. Or larger tournaments. Look, you can play for as little as a dollar, too. There's a choice for every budget at FanDuel Fantasy Football, the very best that fantasy has to offer. Try it now at FanDuel.com and get up to $50 in free entries. $50 in free entries. New users who deposit will get 5 free entries to NFL 50-50 beginner contest valued at up to $50. One free entry a week for 5 weeks. The value of the free entry varies based on the deposited amount, of course. But just go to FanDuel.com right now. FanDuel.com. Click the Join Now button and use my promo code France, F-R-A-N-T-Z. That's FanDuel.com, promo code France, and you'll get this great opportunity to get into fantasy football FanDuel style. Void where prohibited. Right back after this on ESPN 106.5 The Team.
He uncharacteristically walked a couple, but he had 2 outs, and he got ahead real quick, 0-2, tried to throw a breaking ball at the bottom of the zone or bounce it, and just left it, you know, just right there. And shoot, I mean, that's 3, and that it held up. You know, they kind of had a night like we did last night. For the most part, they kept us off the board. It wasn't his best performance. If not for a hanging 0-2 pitch, he'd have given up 1. He's pretty good.
I think it's more so the walks and the curves. That throwing back curve, I think, was one of them. You know, the one for the homer obviously wasn't a good pitch, but I think the walks were the bigger issue.
Yeah, he was strong yesterday. Almost a little too strong at the beginning. Had some command issues, and that can happen to extra days off. His velocity was good. He settled down. I thought Salty did an excellent job with him behind the plate, and he was able to get through 7 innings, 2 runs. We'll take that from every starter. Shutouts can happen any time of year. Doesn't matter if the first game, last game, it can happen. Zimmerman is back on track to pitch this weekend. Pelfrey's active again, so a lot of the guys are starting to trickle back onto the roster. Hopefully get the win and leave Chicago having 1-2 out of 3.
My mentality is so, it's such a football player's mentality, right? Just the aggression, more is better, compete, compete, compete. And I think for me, it's really been understanding sometimes I got to back off, pull the reins back a little bit. I mean, you can tell I've been swinging a lot by my hands, right? Being able to really adjust to the sport. Honestly, I think compete and counts. Compete when it was 0-2 and be able to fight it off and get a hit. I mean, I think my strength is when it comes in to be able to take it. And there's, you don't always get that opportunity. So when they give you something you can drive the other way, drive it. I feel pretty comfortable. I was hoping they were going to get me a few where I could run and go dive. But I feel like I got the arm to make the throws that I need to.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Onward we roll. It is 4:12. We got you until 5 o'clock. Mike Miller bringing you Drive Time at that time right here on ESPN 106.5 Yon Ticket. Coming up at the bottom of this hour, college football preview style. Well, kind of preview and post-view, I guess we could say, because we're going to talk with Mike Jenks, the head coach of Bowling Green, about not just the game coming up, but, yeah, the game that is just wrapped up, of course, the season opening trouncing at the hands of the Ohio State Buckeyes down in the Horseshoe. So we'll talk BG football with Coach Jenks. Then at about 4:45 or so, it'll be time for Jason Candle, the head coach of the UT Rockets, who had a much more pleasant experience in week number 1. His coaching debut, as a matter of fact, as the new head coach of the Rockets. Well, I don't know, Jim, is that his debut or is the bowl game the debut?
Now, the bowl game would technically be his debut because of the way that works, although this last Friday with the Rockets win felt more like the real debut. I've always had
because
my
coached
own...
coached Campbell's team.
Mm-hmm,
you know?
Exactly. I've always had a... Do you count bowl games where a coach leaves before as the new coach's debut? I'm 50-50 on that, to be honest with you.
Technically, on his coaching resume or coaching record, he would be now 2-0. Because he was the head coach of record for the bowl game.
Yes.
Even though it was Matt Campbell's team. So
right.
from an us standpoint, is when does the Candle era begin and when did the Campbell era end? You know, we might say that, you know, the bowl game was his first game coaching, but it wasn't his team. This is his team. Even though it's still most of the recruits are,
sure.
are Campbell's, you know, and the staff under Campbell's. But this is now, you know, the head coach of his first season as head coach, Jason Candle. So anyway, maybe it doesn't matter a lick for anything, but Jason Candle got his first win as the head coach, officially named head coach of this football team, in his first season on Saturday, or actually it was on Friday. So, as they took down Arkansas State. So we're going to have the Jason Candle conversation coming up a little bit later on as well.
Now, there is no argument. It was Mike Jinks's coaching debut for Falcons. That one, there's no question mark with that one.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. So we're definitely looking forward to those conversations. Now, to the point at hand, last hour we did a couple of things, talked a lot about the college football rankings, had some people on hold and talking about that. Because it's just so silly that we just saw how bad they really are. The AP and the coaches are just awful at figuring this stuff out. They put teams in a ranking just to make money. That's all there is to it. You know, for college football as a whole, for the networks and so on, so that they can charge more from advertisers. That's the only reason they do it, because they had no idea what they're doing. as we saw, as unranked teams are now in the top 10 or top 11 or 12, and ranked teams are all the way down in the, almost out. Our high-ranked teams are almost out of the ranking altogether. So we talked about that, and then we also talked about the Colin Kaepernick scenario that just continues to update itself on an almost hourly basis. There's something new. John Tortorella, the head coach of the Team USA hockey team for the Hockey World Cup, which is going to be played later this month, has announced that he will bench any player who sits during the national anthem during the World Cup. And if you're thinking, hey, well, maybe that's just because it's the World Cup and it is our country against other countries, so of course we have to respect our country in that setting, you might be right. It also just might be that John Tortorella, being a very, very proud American, thinks that everybody should be standing at attention for that flag because it is the freedom that we have in this country that gives us, that makes this the greatest country in the world.
But by the way, quick question on this one, I don't know if it was mentioned in this or if Tortorella mentioned it, but since these are international games being played, it would be both the U.S. And whoever they're playing. Was that any indication that he wants everybody to stand for all the countries' anthems when they play? I didn't catch that.
I don't think anybody has ever disrespected another country saying we're not going to stand for their anthem.
Because that's the other stark part about his comments to me is it's and I'm not trying to excuse anything or anything, but on the one hand, you have the Kaepernicks in an NFL game in the United States, and in this situation with Tortorella, these are going to be international matchups, so it'll be U.S. against some other country, so you'll have two anthems at the beginning. I'm just curious if that came out. I'm sure it will.
Yeah, I don't think it will be asked, to be honest with you, because I don't think it's ever happened before.
And I can't recall it happening before.
What's that?
I can't recall it happening before.
And I'll tell you why it probably never will, Jim. The only nations I would imagine that anybody would not stand for their anthem would be some of the nations that are committing the human rights abuses around the world, or nations that have killed or are still attempting to kill Americans. For example, North Korea, communist North Korea. It is just a walking human rights violation, that country is, they have made openly aggressive gestures toward the United States, threatening to hit us with nuclear weapons, et cetera. If somebody was politically minded, who was on a hockey team or one of our baseball teams or anything else, and we came up against North Korea, and somebody didn't want to stand to honor that, I might be able to see it. But here's the thing. North Korea is not sending baseball and hockey teams to go play against the rest of the world. They don't work and play well with others. They're not even doing it. I could see somebody not wanting to stand up for the national anthem of Iran if Iran was ever in an Olympics game or a World Cup game. Because, again, that is a nation that calls us the Great Satan. Their people chant in the streets, death to America, death to America. Their supreme leader, the Ayatollah Khamenei, says death to America, of course. I can kind of see why we wouldn't stand.
And as you're saying that, incidentally, I'm trying to think what sports worldwide would either of those countries participate. The only one I could think of is soccer.
Soccer. And I don't even think they do that. I really don't know.
North Korea made a cup one time. Iran made a few. They both have made cups in the past, but they're not like there all the time like a Brazil or something.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's going to sound strange, but if North Korea, for example, had an international soccer team and they allowed them to play in international competitions around the world, I think there would be a huge fear on the North Korean part of the North Korean government that every single member of that team, as soon as they went back to their hotel, would be working their way out. And they would be trying to leave and trying to ask for asylum and refugee status in whatever the country.
One would think. I mean, I read a story a couple years ago. I think it was the 20.
What's the word I'm looking for about it? Oh, defect.
Defect. Yes, that's the one. I do recall reading a story from the 2010 World Cup because I think North Korea actually did play in that one.
Really?
And they did not do so well as one would expect. I think they were in Brazil's group of all people.
Okay.
And I did read a story saying that since they failed when they got back to North Korea, Y and Z was going to happen to him, and none of those things were good.
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, Jim, it's interesting you bring that up. That's one of the enduring and lasting images of Saddam Hussein in Iraq, because it was his sons, one of his lunatic sons, one of the sadists that he seeded, was in charge of the Iraqi national Olympic teams or national teams, and the soccer team lost. And maybe they lost a couple or something. And they had the soccer team tortured in ways that you don't even want to imagine but among them had them put in stocks, you know, where their feet are in stocks, you know, like old stockades, upside down, and had the bottoms of their feet whipped with whips. Just some horrific, terrible things that are done in some of these countries. So to my point earlier on, or your point, since you brought up, would any Americans not stand for the flags of other countries? There are some countries, maybe those, where maybe that would be the case, where they wouldn't want to stand for an anthem of another country like that. But I don't think it's ever happened, even during the Cold War. You know, even during the Cold War, you know, the Russian anthem or the Soviet anthem would play, and it was still respected, and the American anthem was played. I don't think that stuff was going on.
No, you know, I don't recall it. And of course, back in the day, take hockey, where part of this started with Coach yeah. Tortorella. You know, the Soviet Union, when they existed as the Soviet Union, were constantly winning the gold in Olympic hockey, which meant their anthem would get played the way they do for medal ceremonies. And I don't recall some kind of protest happening at that point either.
And the only time, of course, we didn't go to the Olympics
Is that 80 or 84? I always get them backwards.
Well, no. Well, 1980 was the Lake Placid. That was the Miracle on Ice.
Okay, I'm thinking of the Olympic boycott when it was in Moscow or something.
The Russians boycotted our games in 84. The Summer Games.
That was it, and it was 80, and I think Moscow was 84, and we protested in 84 or something, or what is it? I don't remember.
No. Hold on. Because we have to remember, it's only been where they do it now every 2 years. You know, there's the Summer Games, then 2 years later the Winter Games.
Yeah.
Back then they were done in the same year.
Yes, that's true.
So what it was, if memory serves me right, the Winter Games were in Lake Placid in here in the States in 1980. That's when the Miracle on Ice
happened. Miracle year, yep.
And also 80 was the Summer Games. Those were the Moscow Games that we did not go to. We did not go to because Jimmy Carter said we're not going. This happened before, obviously, he lost the presidency in November of that year.
Right, so those would have been in August or late July or whatever.
And then it was in 1984, 4 years later, that the Russians returned the favor and did not come to Los Angeles for the Summer Games there.
Incidentally, side note, by the Soviets protesting that the one in L.A., that's why the unshatterable record of most gold medals held by the United States with 80 gold medals from those 84 games will never be touched.
How many did we have this time around?
It wasn't anywhere close to 80, I know that.
Yeah, I mean, it might not have
been. That's just golds.
I know. Because we had 120 some odd in Rio overall medals, but I think the golds were pretty doggone up there. Hold on, Rio medal table. Let me see if I can find it real quick. I thought we might have been up near there. Oh no, I guess not. You were right. Just 46 golds, 37 silvers, 38 bronze.
Yep.
Grand total of 121.
Yep.
Doggone near doubling Great Britain, which finished second with 67.
Yeah, that 80 golds at a single Olympics, I don't think is ever getting
never
touched.
Never going to be touched. I think you're right about that. But anyway, the point is, even then, we didn't. Let me. To be honest with you, Jim, the only scenario I can picture happening today in which any athlete, not just American, but any athlete, didn't stand for the anthem of another country, it wouldn't be an American. It would be a Middle Eastern Muslim theocracy, in which somebody would not stand for Israel. Because of the anti-Semitism on display. We saw that in the Olympics. Remember the Egyptian wrestler who got beat by the Israeli wrestler and he refused to shake his hand?
Yes, I do remember catching that one.
Yeah, because of the anti-Semitism that still exists in so many of those countries and in that region of the world particularly, not that there isn't anti-Semitism in other places, because there is. You know, it's like racism. To say it doesn't exist at all is foolish. It exists, and that's why, going back to my monologue on the Paul Feinbaum situation, Paul Feinbaum didn't say there are no racists in the world or in this country, but to say that people are just oppressed blanket and that police are out there to get people of color is just factually inaccurate. It's just not true. But there are still, of course, isolated anecdotal incidents where, yeah, it exists. Well, that was an example of anti-Semitism where somebody wouldn't shake the Israeli wrestler's hand who just beat him. And I think if that Israeli perhaps would have won, let's say, the gold medal, and I don't know what match that was. It was just, I may have just been in pool play or whatever. But if an Israeli athlete wins a gold medal, I could see somebody from one of those countries refusing to stand and acknowledge Israel, because many Muslims in the Middle East don't acknowledge Israel as a country. You know what I mean? As its own state. They believe that the land that was given to them by the United Nations in 1948, after, of course, the end of World War II and all of the Jews were driven, or so many were driven out of Europe, when they gave them that land and said, here's your country, there are many Palestinians slash Muslims who believe that is not, that is their holy land, so they don't recognize Israel's right to exist, so they therefore probably would not recognize their anthem. Or their flag. That would be my only guess.
You know, bringing some of all this...
I don't think any American athlete would ever do that.
You know, bringing some of all this back around, you know, it's almost turned into a fun history lesson segment. It kind of makes me remember something I saw long ago in the Ken Burns baseball series. Do you recall how the national anthem started getting played at sporting events here in the United States to begin with?
I do not.
Game one of the 1918 World Series was the first time they played the anthem before, and that was, a couple months before World War One would end. All the sports through the 20s, then, you know, in the infancy leagues, you're in the infancy of the NFL, for example, at that point. NBA was 20 years away. During the 20s, the rest of the sports just kind of adopted that, and during the 20s, it also became every baseball game. For like 1918 and 1919, they only did it in pregame before a World Series game, and then it expanded from there. So just since we're on a random history lesson segment, out there. It's mentioned in Ken Burns' baseball series, among other places.
Yeah, I did not watch Ken Burns' baseball series. Not all of it, anyway. It was how many hours? It was
like 12 or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, you need a couple days for that one, no doubt.
Yeah. I mean, I like baseball too, Ken, but come on, brah. Yeah, give us a little bit of a break here. That's a long one. It's like Kevin Costner. Didn't he do like 4 baseball movies? We get it, bro. You really love baseball. What else did he do? He did Field of Dreams. He did, what were all Costner's baseball movies?
Let's see, Field of Dreams, Bull Durham.
Bull Durham.
I can't remember the name of, For Love of the Game was the name of it. It was not good, but he was playing a Detroit Tiger who threw a no-hitter at Yankee Stadium as part of the storyline of that in that movie.
But that's the funny part. That's the funniest part about it is it wasn't very good, but it was just, after he came out with it, it's like, bro, we saw Bull Durham. We saw Field of Dreams. We get it. You really like
right,
baseball.
That was kind of my reaction.
Something
after
else.
I watched it, because I gave it a chance too.
Make something else, man. Seriously. All right, we need to get a timeout here because we got to clear the deck and clear space for the interviews with Coach Jinx and Coach Jason Campbell. I almost said Campbell. That's Matt Campbell, gone, Iowa State. By the way, how did Iowa State do this week?
You know, I didn't look that up. Hang on. Now you got me all curious.
Yeah, former Rocket coach Matt Campbell, now at Iowa State, how he did in his debut. And I think that one is safe to call his debut, while Jason Candle took Matt Campbell's place.
Oh, not good. Iowa State lost at home to 1AA Northern Iowa, 25-20.
Ooh. That's going to leave a mark.
Yes.
That's unfortunate. Okay, well, I know he'll turn it around. He was seriously a very good coach at Toledo. Very great recruiter. Very, very good guy. Really enjoyed conversations with Matt Campbell. He'll do well there. Jason Candle, however, is already doing well. 1-0 in his debut season, and, of course, he won the bowl game last year with that same team after Matt Campbell took the job at Iowa State. So here's what we've got. We're going to take a timeout. We're going to get a bottom-of-the-hour sports center. Then we're going to hear from Coach Mike Jinks at Bowling Green. He'll talk with Jim Cushlin about the Week 1 loss to Ohio State and Week 2 coming up. Then we're going to hear from Jason Candle in the same format as we talk about his win over Arkansas State and where the Rockets go from here. Kareem Hunt, Logan Woodside had a huge game in game number 1. We talked about that with Mark Beyer yesterday. So we're going to get our Maction on here coming right up after this sports center on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
106.5 The Ticket.
And welcome back into the extravaganza. Jim Cushlin here hanging out with you, talking some college football. We like to go through everybody, of course, here in the region. And right now it's the turn for the Bowling Green Falcons. Get an update on them after they were defeated at Ohio State. And then getting ready for the home opener coming up this weekend at the Doit against North Dakota. It'll be a 2:30 pregame time for that one, by the way, over on Talk Radio 1470. And to help us talk all things Bowling Green football, we welcome in the head coach of the Bowling Green Falcons. He is Mike Jinks. Hi, Coach. How you doing?
Hi, Jim. Doing all right. Sun came up.
Sun came up. Indeed. And let's go through this game at Ohio State real quick. Obviously, it was a lot farther of a score than even I thought it was going to be. I didn't really expect it to end up this way. 77-10. Ouch, the final in Columbus. Your thoughts on that one? Did you feel they were running up the score or anything like that?
Ouch, indeed. No, not at all, man. Those guys, this is football, and that's what it's about, you know. Those guys were making plays, and we weren't. You know, As the game got kind of out of hand, I think Coach did a great job of putting in some of his other kids and getting them some reps, and those kids that came in continue to make plays, man. Those are things that we've got to fix and find a way to get better.
And with those, some of those things you have to be able to fix, as you're saying, Coach, would you say more of them are on the defensive side after an outing like that? Do you chalk it up to being, well, that's a strong team, big conference in their building, or are there things on both sides of the ball that after this one was done, you're like, yeah, we got to work on that too?
Hey, definitely. After an outing like that, it's on both sides of the football. You know, to be honest with you, the special teams played well. I mean, I know it's crazy to say in a situation like that. If they didn't play as well as they did, they'd beat us by 100 points. So there's enough blame, for lack of a better word, to go around. You know, one of the things we wanted to do was look in the mirror, coaches and players alike, and you know, we've got to own it. And then the key is, what do we do from this point on?
Was any of this an effort thing in your mind, Coach, or was it just simply talent?
No. Since I've gotten here, my hat's off to the way these guys prepare and the way they go about their business. If anything, I think as coaches, you got to learn your team a little bit. And we probably asked some of these guys to do some things that, you know, we shouldn't have. And again, that's one of the deals that we've got to look at as coaches. And well, those are the games that we want to be in. Those are the games that you know, year in, year out, that you want to be a part of. And when you're got a talent deficit like that, you got to be able to put your kids in a better situation to be successful.
We're talking with head coach of the Bowling Green Falcons, Mike Jenks, off the 77-10 loss at Ohio State to open the season. Now, you mentioned this, that you felt they were able to get a lot of their other players in, but of course that means you were able to as well over the course of this game. Anything you found out from some of the second-teamers that makes you go, I might have to give him a little more playing time?
Well, the little receiver, the Zimmerman kid, the true freshman, he showed up and he sparked. I think Josh Cleveland, a little running back, coming in, showed that he's gonna, he's deserving of some more touches. So yeah, there were some things that we found and some guys that really earned some more playing time.
What do you tell your team? Because, you know, I know they were feeling good about themselves coming into this one, that they felt they had the talent to maybe even steal this one. When your team suffers a loss of this kind of magnitude, what do you as a coach tell them in the locker room after the game?
You be humble in victory and defeat, man, and you own it, and you don't point the finger, you don't place you don't place blame, you know, and you don't hang your head and you don't pout. So I didn't have to deal with any of that. I've got there's a football team here that's got a lot of pride, and it bothered them as well it should. But at the end of the day, you know, it's one football game, and it doesn't deter us from, you know, achieving the goals that we've got set out for the rest of the season.
Head coach Mike Jenks of the Bowling Green Falcons joining us here on the Extravaganza, going over all things Bowling Green football after the defeat against Ohio State. But coming up this week, Coach, at the Deutzel home opener, that's always fun. And you get a North Dakota squad from 1AA, FCS, whatever you want to call it. It's all the same thing to me. They come into the Deut on Saturday. On the surface, morons like me would say, now this is a pick-me-up game for Bowling Green after what happened. They should manhandle a 1AA school in their own building. I'm sure you're not taking that kind of approach, Coach, but obviously this is going to be one, not just the home fans, but to get that sour taste out of all your mouths from last week. You're looking forward to getting back on the field, I would imagine, for this one.
Yeah, I think we can't wait for Saturday to get here. You know, like you said, that one hurt last week, and you know, we're everybody in this building has got a ton of pride. So we can't wait to get out in front of our home fans at the Deut and get back at it.
And now, the opposite problem, I would say, at times could pop up in this game. We've seen in the past some 1AA schools here and there knock off a big boy. What do you have to do and your team has to do mentally to prevent something like that from happening?
Well, you've got to be focused on the task at hand, and you don't take anybody for granted. And again, Jim, you know, after this, I'm not going to speak too much about last week ever again, but and when you have a performance like that, you don't have to worry about people thinking they're better than they are. All right, all we want to do right now in this moment is play football again.
And as you're getting ready to play football for this one, coming up on Saturday, it's North Dakota coming into the Doit for the home opener. 2:30 pregame time, by the way. That'll be over on Talk Radio 1470. As a 1AA school, we don't at this level get to see them, you know, all that much. And incidentally, for our listeners out there, no, this is not that North Dakota State team that had Carson Wentz on and has been winning 1AA national championships. This is North Dakota minus the state. But what can you tell us about this team, Coach, and what do you guys want to do to try to stop them?
Well, you know, we're going to have to spread it out a little bit. I think last year they finished number 6 in the country versus the run. So, you know, on the flip side of that, they want to keep the box loaded and they want to bring a lot of pressure. You know, we're going to have to be sound on our blitz pickup and our protection. I feel good about that because, again, that's one of the things that we did a decent job of in Columbus. Offensively for them, they're going to want to keep the ball and grind it out a little bit and kind of slow the pace down. So it'll be a conflict of style.
Any injury update from anything suffered against the Buckeyes that we should be aware of?
Well, we came out healthy, man, and that's probably the only positive out of last weekend.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. It's always a good, especially from your coach's point of view, always good when you could say you come out of this one healthy. Next week it'll be the Bowling Green Falcons hosting North Dakota at the Doit, 2:30, the pregame time. Coach, we always appreciate the time, always appreciate the insight. Best of luck out there on Saturday, and hopefully next week we're talking about a Bowling Green Falcons win.
Sounds good, Jim. Appreciate your time.
That is the head coach of the Bowling Green Falcons, Mike Jinks, taking a few moments to talk all things Falcons with us here on the Extravaganza. Yeah, it was a lot tougher, 77-10. Honest to goodness, that is a score I did not pick. I mean, you guys heard me. I was the one saying all week that if Bowling Green cuts down their mistakes and Ohio State takes a little while to gel, we could be looking at the 2 years ago Navy opener all over again. That meant Ohio State would win, but it would be a lot closer. A blowout of this magnitude, I did not foresee, but as Coach mentioned, players are looking to get that nasty taste out of their mouth. They know they're better than this, and they came away from that Ohio State game healthy, so they have the full contingent for the home opener against the completely opposite team in terms of the power structure. You go from an at Ohio State, sixth ranked in the nation, Big Ten and playoff potential, down to a North Dakota squad. Again, as I joked with Coach, not to be confused with North Dakota State, which is where Carson Wentz, the now NFL quarterback, played his college ball. That team won 1AA national championships. Not this one. This is regular old North Dakota. They do well against the run, as Coach said, but it's still a 1AA school coming into your building. So it's the kind of opposite as what we saw last week. In this case, the Bowling Green Falcons are and should be favored by a lot, and they get it for the home opener. So should be an interesting game and most likely a win, but hopefully we will be talking about that win with Coach next week. Got a whole bunch more coming up for you here on the Extravaganza as we continue on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
Welcome back into the Extravaganza. Jim Cushlin here. We continue your college football updates as the Toledo Rockets, they were victorious. This was back on Friday, by the way, of this opening weekend, 31-10 at Arkansas State. Home opener at the Glass Bowl coming up this weekend against Maine. And to help us break it all down, we welcome in once again the head coach of the Toledo Rockets. He is Jason Candle. Hi, Coach. How you doing?
Hi, Jim. Happy to be here. How you doing?
Doing pretty well. And so are you guys back on Friday night. Logan Woodside, offensive player of the week for the West Division in the MAC, career high 371 yards rushing. You got the ground production for more or less that you would have wanted, and you went out on the road against a team you're familiar with and got the W.
Yeah, a great game for our team. Good start to the season. You know, tough place to go play. You know, kind of a hard place to get to, and you know, travel was not ideal. And you know, certainly went down, took care of business, did what we had to do, really proud of our team, you know, really stood up defensively and played together collectively as a unit, and, you know, got some great individual performances on offense that led to a victory, and certainly happy to hit it into week two.
And with all those things you just said, I do find it interesting. You know, if you ask the average person on the street, it's like, oh, Arkansas State, ah, no big deal, that's just a Sun Belt, but you know better than that, as you just described, so it is a solid win in many respects for your club.
Yeah, by many picked to win the Sun Belt, their team. Certainly a team that finished really strong last year to the season. I think some folks around here got a skewed opinion because we handled them pretty good here last year. You know, but they found out a couple days prior to the game that their starting quarterback wasn't going to be able to go, and came in here and we were able to turn them over five times. So, you know, not having your trigger man, and, you know, compound that with five turnovers, that makes it hard to win anywhere. So, you know, we certainly knew we had a stiffer challenge this year, you know, a full team at full strength and a team that, you know, has a lot of team speed, and, you know, playing them at their place coming off of, you know, the bowl game a couple years ago and last year, what we were able to do to them, I knew they would be ready to go, and they certainly were. And but our guys are ready to rock too, so I was really, really proud of how they played.
We're talking with head coach of the Toledo Rockets, Jason Candle, here on the Extravaganza, giving you your Rocket football update, a 31-10 winner back on Friday in week one at Arkansas State. We'll obviously get to some of the running backs in a second, and to a degree, Logan Woodside, but talk to me about some of his receiving core, because, you know, you got to have guys on the other side that catch the ball to give career high in passing numbers to your quarterback. I thought all Jones, Thompson, Roberts specifically were all outstanding in this one.
Yeah, they all had some elite individual performances, I thought. You know, Cody had a tremendous game. I'd love to see him score on that last one instead of putting the ball on the ground. But, you know, he's a really a do-everything-right, really try-hard guy who really works hard at it. You know, so he's been a spectacular player for us coming down the stretch last season. You know, obviously had a tremendous bowl game and, you know, picked right up where he left off, you know, the other night. Corey Jones, you know, has played a lot of football for us in the return game and also at wide receiver. You know, he had a good game. And, you know, Mike Roberts kind of, you know, broke onto the scene a little bit from the sense of, you know, he was a part-time player last year. And, you know, his role increased from a 20 to 25 snaps per game guy to, I think he played over 65 snaps the other night. So, you know, certainly with the double the load of his, you know, what we're asking him to do and to see his production go up and really seize the moment and his opportunities, that was really encouraging.
And Logan Woodside, he was doing a lot of things right. Three touchdowns, no pick, a career high for him, 371 passing yards. You like to see that kind of poise, I would imagine, out of your quarterback spot to boot, and you got that on Friday.
Poise is a term that we use a lot here, and you hit it right on the head. That's what we ask that guy to be. You know, he's got to be. You know, I think of my initial impression of watching the game on the sideline and then coming back and really confirming this, watching the videotape, was that he played really within himself and within our offense, and he really looked comfortable out there. And, you know, we asked that guy to, you know, be a great decision maker first, and then two, to be accurate. You know, if you made me give you a checklist of what we're looking for in a quarterback, those top two things, I mean, boy, oh boy, he hit a home run on both of those. And when you're able to do that, usually, you know, that leads to pretty good football. But, he had a great rapport with his receivers the other night, you know, really, you know, hit the spots that we needed to get hit, and, you know, playing pitch and catch out there. It was really fun to watch.
We're talking with head coach of the Toledo Rockets, Jason Candle, as we get you updated on all things college football for the Rockets. 31-10 winner at Arkansas State. Home opener coming up at the Glass Bowl against Maine over the weekend, and we'll get to that in a second. And, coach, you were talking about, you know, you're on the road. It's a tough place to play, despite maybe what some fans looking at it at the surface may think. And you guys were down early this one, 3-0, so the crowd would get into it, but at the end of the day, you were able to make some things happen. You get that equilibrium on offense by having Jones, Moore, and Hunt, and Swanson doing their thing, and you're able to take back the momentum in that second quarter, and then at the end of the day, your defense only allows 10 points, so walk me through some of the defensive things that they were able to do later in the game to keep Arkansas State off the scoreboard.
Yeah, I think number one thing for me, too, you know, what kind of gets missed is we had a punt down inside the five. We averaged starting field position after a kickoff was, you know, was at the 18-yard line for them. And when you have to, when you put them in a long field and they have to drive the ball a long way, you know, really any team, you know, us included, that's difficult to do. Percentages go way down the farther back that ball is placed to start drive. So, you know, that was a big deal. And then certainly our defense, you know, did their job. They rose up. That our coaches did a great job giving them a plan that allowed them to, you know, to play fast and see what was going on and just run and react and hit the ball. You know, I think that's certainly key. And I know, you know, our guys on defense, the coaches, that, like I said, they did an outstanding job of putting them guys in position to succeed. You know, and we got some defensive players that got a real chip on their shoulder. And to be honest with you, you know, they were tired of hearing about the reason why we won the game last year was because their quarterback didn't play, and they were, you know, probably out to prove a little bit that even though we had some great seniors graduate last year, you know, these guys, you know, they got a chance to be a good unit as well.
And you mentioned that to me when I talked to you last week and brought up the defense, and you basically said the same thing you just said now, that, you know, they're playing with a little chip on their shoulder. They want some attention too. And when you have a defense that's motivated like that, that could help you improve on some things, wouldn't it?
Well, defensive football is, you know, it's a emotional, violent game. And, you know, even though you want to play poised, even though you want to be smart, and even though you want to be a thinker out there a little bit, I think, you know, you're talking about, you know, the defensive mentality to be a great defense is just a little bit different than sometimes the offensive mentality. And, you know, I think those guys, you know, they're searching for a little bit of, they're hungry for some respect, and they're hungry for, you know, to kind of show what they can, you know, what they can do, and go out and prove some to people that, you know, like I said, they can be the unit that they've talked about all off season and preseason. So, you know, they'll be tested again this week, and, you know, hopefully they rise up and answer the bell again.
And let's get to that game this week. It's the home opener this Saturday, 7 o'clock kickoff at the Glass Bowl. You welcome in FCS 1AA, whatever you want to call it, Maine into the Glass Bowl. And obviously, and I've talked to enough of you coaches over the last couple years to know that despite what guys like me may think, you certainly are not taking them lightly despite the 1AA moniker.
Well, I think, you know, here's a story there. You know, UConn, you know, their UConn game last week was a very, very good competitive game. And here last year, UConn beats Houston at the end of the season. UConn has 15 returning starters coming back. You know, we all saw what Houston did to Oklahoma this weekend. You know, so that you can tell what kind of team UConn had, and for these guys to play them to a three-point game and really, honestly, should have probably won the football game. You know, they certainly have our attention, certainly have our respect. This is a good team coming in, young coach, fiery coach, play really hard on defense when he was a defensive coordinator last year, and I think that's been infectious to his entire football team leading through week one. So they'll be prepared well. They'll come in here fired up and ready to go and ready to prove themselves, and we've got to match their effort, match their intensity, certainly manage the, you know, the emotions of being at home for the first football game and what I hope to be a, you know, a packed house here at the Glass Bowl for our home opener, and you know, play rocket football.
Well said, Coach. And it'll be Maine coming into town to the Glass Bowl Saturday night, 7 o'clock, the kickoff home opener for the Toledo Rockets as they look to go 2-0. Coach, best of luck out there on Saturday. And we hope when we reconvene next week, we're talking about another Rockets W.
Thanks so much. See you at the Glass Bowl.
That is head coach of the Toledo Rockets, Jason Candle, taking a few minutes, giving you that state of the Rockets right now, a 31-10 win over Arkansas State. And, you know, we on the surface, we're going to look at that and say, okay, it was a road game, but it's also a Sun Belt team. Whoop-de-doo. But, you know, thankfully, you know, guys like me are not the head football coaches because they don't take any of these teams lightly. And you heard him say it, you know, it's a weird place to get to in Arkansas. It's kind of off the beaten path, if you will. And so travel's interesting to get to. And those sometimes can be factors if you let it become a factor. And the Rockets did enough things efficiently, though they did have two turnovers in that Arkansas State game, but they did enough things efficiently, offensively and defensively, to get the win there. And a very good point Coach makes, especially this home opener. Now you're back at the Glass Bowl. You're going to open the season, raucous crowd, evening game, and all that stuff, and it's a 1AA school. So, you know, guys like us, we're all thinking, oh, blowout. But he's very conscious of what nearly happened this past weekend. Maine nearly went in there and beat Connecticut. Now, Connecticut, the American Athletic, not exactly world beaters or anything, but you heard the almost 6 degrees of separation there, throw it into Houston, Oklahoma, and that is true. That's part of what messed up Houston at the end of last season is Connecticut beat them at the end of the year. They're returning a bunch of starters. So, in other words, good thing I'm not the head coach of the Rockets, because he is absolutely not taking these guys lightly, and it's good to know that neither is the rest of the team, because as we just saw with Maine over this past weekend with Connecticut, that means that this isn't exactly a 1AA pushover. You're not exactly going to go out and win this game, you know, 60-0. It would be outstanding and a heck of a lot of fun for whoever goes to the Glass Bowl on Saturday if that is what transpires. But this is apparently a more solid team than the 1AA moniker would indicate. So got to play efficient football, cut down on turnovers and all those things, and they should be successful. It's Saturday night for the Rockets. They welcome in Maine to the Glass Bowl for a 7 o'clock shot kick. Jim Quislett here on the Extravaganza. Lots more fun coming at you after this quick time.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.